Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. On this 4th of July weekend, we wish all of you a happy 4th, and we want to say thanks and happy birthday to everyone at KNSJ, which launched on Independence Day back in 2013. Independent media has never been more important than now, with our democracy at risk. Today, we have a special report on the Congressional Committee hearings on the January 6th insurrection back in 2020, including testimony that legal experts are calling a smoking gun which could trigger the indictment of former President Donald Trump. Then from Public News Service, we'll have news of the latest Supreme Court rulings limiting the EPA's ability to address climate change and opening the door to perhaps ending the Trump-era remain-in-Mexico policy for migrants, plus announcement from President Biden on efforts to end the filibuster to enact abortion rights. In local news, Jewish leaders have signed a letter saying the Supreme Court's overturn of Roe v. Wade violates their religious freedom. A data breach at the California Department of Justice website has revealed personal information on concealed carry gun applicants. A raid on a Ramona home resulted in seizure of machine guns and more. Santee is moving closer to putting a measure on the ballot to legalize and tax cannabis sales. We'll also have a roundup on fireworks shows and parades across our inland region today, as well as a re-airing of our annual 4th of July special, our interviews with our nation's founding fathers and mothers on the issues of concern, both then and now. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. Former President Donald Trump was warned by the Secret Service that a mob assembled on January 6, 2020, was armed with weapons including semi-automatic rifles, spears, pistols, body armor, and bear spray. Yet, he urged the Secret Service to take down metal detectors at his rally at the Ellipse and omit his armed followers. He then incited the crowd to march to the Capitol, according to testimony presented by White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, a Republican, to the Senate's committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. Hutchinson was a top aide to Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff at the time, and she had an office located between the Oval Office and the Vice President's office. Here is a key part of her testimony in response to questioning by Liz Cheney.
He wanted it full, and he was angry that we weren't letting people through the knives with weapons, what the Secret Service deemed as weapons and our weapons. But when we were in the offstage announced tent, I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. Let the people in. Take the effing mags away.
Secret Service refused to remove the magnetometers, however. Solomon Weisenberg told the New York Times, "This is the smoking gun." Weisenberg is a former deputy independent counsel in Ken Starr's investigation that led to President Bill Clinton's impeachment. Weisenberg added, "There isn't any question this establishes a prima facie case for Trump's criminal culpability on seditious conspiracy charges." Hutchinson said she felt fearful on January 6th and said the White House counsel Pat Cipollone told her to make sure the motorcade did not go to the Capitol, predicting Trump and others would be arrested and that it would appear Trump was encouraging a riot, the 26-year-old aide calmly told congressional panelists. Here's an excerpt of that testimony.
Mr. Cipollone said something to you like, make sure the movement to the Capitol does not happen. Is that correct?
Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
Hutchinson further testified that Secret Service agents told her Trump demanded they take him to the Capitol in defiance of the White House counsel's advice. She said she was told by Tony Ornato, White House Deputy Chief of Staff, that after Trump was informed he should not go to the Capitol due to security concerns, Trump ordered the vehicle to go to the Capitol anyway, even trying to grab the steering wheel and lunging at Robert Engel, the head of the security detail. Now, the agents are reportedly disputing some aspects of the incident in the vehicle, though Engel confirmed in prior testimony that Trump did want to be taken to the Capitol. The bulk of Hutchinson's testimony, however, was based not on what anyone else told her, but on her own eyewitness accounts. She also testified that while rioters shouted, "Hang Mike Pence," she became increasingly alarmed, as did Cipollone, who implored Meadows to have Trump take action to stop the mayhem. But she heard Meadows say he doesn't think they're doing anything wrong, indicating Trump would not intervene. Hutchinson said Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, told her Trump planned to lead the march 4 days before it occurred. Meadows told her that things might get real, real bad on January 6th, she testified. Both Giuliani and Meadows sought pardons for their actions related to the insurrection, Hutchinson told the committee. Now, she also described disturbing temper outbursts by Trump. She said he threw plates with food at walls twice, once in anger after the Secret Service and aides had refused to take him to the Capitol, and on an earlier occasion after he saw Attorney General Barr in a media interview stating that the election was not stolen. Hutchinson described ketchup running down the wall. At the end of the hearing, Republican Liz Cheney revealed that individuals with ties to Trump have tried to intimidate witnesses, including Hutchinson. Nearly all of the most damning testimony to date implicating former President Donald Trump in a willful scheme to steal an election he knew he'd lost has come not from Democrats, but from prominent Republicans, including a respected conservative judge, Republican lawmakers, and election officials. Attorney General Bill Barr told him bluntly that he lost the election fairly after 62 judges all found zero evidence of fraud. His campaign manager, the White House counsel, and others all told him that he had lost and there was no fraud. But Trump refused to listen. In other recent hearings held by the committee, more witnesses provided additional testimony corroborating that Trump knew there was no fraud, yet he pressured officials to commit illegal acts. Specifically, witnesses stated that Trump pressured Vice President Mike Pence to certify fake electors substituted for the votes cast by real electors, an action deemed illegal by a prominent conservative judge and others. He inflamed the mob to turn against Pence, even after gallows were erected outside the Capitol, putting Pence's life at risk. He personally called state election officials to demand that they certify slates of faked electors, a scheme devised in advance of the election outcome. There were telephone excerpts as well as testimony from witnesses confirming this. He bullied election workers to violate the law, then published personal information that led to threats of violence and protesters outside their homes. And after Department of Justice officials told him their investigation found no fraud, he tried to coerce those officials into also doing illegal actions or lose their jobs. He also fleeced his own supporters, apparently, by soliciting funds to fight election fraud, and yet he spent most of that money on other causes. Here are details on those points. Trump ignored the legal advice of his top legal advisors, as we've mentioned, who all told him he'd lost the election. One conservative lawyer, however, John Eastman, put forward a debunked theory that Vice President Mike Pence could certify votes from fake slates of electors in key battleground states instead of the actual votes of the real electors, or alternatively, that Pence could just refuse to certify and kick the matter back to the states. But Eastman himself knew this theory was not credible, and when pressed, he told Vice President Mike Pence's top lawyer, Greg Jacob, that the Supreme Court would likely rule unanimously against the legality of this action. The FBI has now raided Eastman's home after he refused to testify under a subpoena, and he now faces likely criminal prosecution. A highly respected conservative judge for whom Eastman once clerked, J. Michael Luttig, testified there was no basis in the Constitution or laws of the United States at all for the theory espoused by Mr. Eastman. None. Judge Luttig further stated that it would have been illegal for Vice President Mike Pence to take such action, since the Constitution does not empower the Vice President to alter in any way the votes that have been cast, either by rejecting certain of them or otherwise. And he added that such action would have thrown the nation into a constitutional crisis. Mike Pence repeatedly refused Trump's demands, and yet, even when informed that a mob was chanting "Hang Mike Pence" and erected a gallows outside the Capitol, Trump issued an inflammatory tweet further endangering Pence, stating, "Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done." That's a statement akin to pouring gasoline on a fire, according to one Pence aide's testimony. Vice President Pence's chief of staff grew alarmed for Pence's safety, and at one point, the violent mob that invaded the Capitol came within 40 feet of the vice president. Hutchinson's testimony, combined with that of others, showed that well before the attack on the Capitol, Trump engaged in the crime of seditious conspiracy, outlining what Watergate journalist Carl Bernstein described as the legal, moral, and criminal case against Trump. Department of Justice officials testified to Trump's attempts to pressure them to lie, and when they refused, to replace a key official with a Trump supporter. In a December 27th call with Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and Donahue, Trump was not interested in the actual results of the Department of Justice investigation, Donahue said. Rosen told Trump the department could not change the outcome of an election. Donahue recalls he responded very quickly, and he said, essentially, that's not what I'm asking you to do. What I'm asking you to do is to say it was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican Congress. In an action reminiscent of Richard Nixon's infamous Saturday night massacre firing, Trump tried to name Acting Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Clark to replace Rosen, an action squelched only by threat of mass resignations from key DOJ officials. Republican officials tied Trump directly to a fake electors plot in Georgia and Arizona. When those officials refused to commit illegal acts, he unleashed threats on the officials and their families. Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger testified that when Raffensperger insisted in a phone call with Trump that he had lost Georgia, Trump issued a threat. If Raffensperger would not find votes that didn't exist, he stated, "That's a big risk to you. All of this stuff is very dangerous." Raffensperger said he and his family were targeted with threats after that conversation with Trump. Arizona's Republican House Speaker Rusty Bowers said he too refused because, quote, "I did not want to be used as a pawn." After he refused Trump's illegal demand to certify fake electors, Bowers says his home address was published and protesters disrupted his family life at a time when his daughter was critically ill in their home and very disturbed by what occurred. Georgia election workers Wandrea Shea Moss and her mother Ruby Friedman tearfully told the committee of vile threats they received after Trump told lies that made his followers believe they had committed acts to steal the election for Biden, a lie that has been completely debunked even by Georgia's Republican Secretary of State. Freeman said she was told by the FBI that she wasn't safe at home and was forced into hiding for several months, feeling, quote, homeless. Moss says even today she is fearful to show her ID or have her name said aloud for fear of violence by Trump's followers. Donald Trump used the big lie of election fraud that he knew didn't exist to bilk his followers out of a fortune. Trump's former campaign staffer, Hannah Allred, told the committee that the Election Defense Fund he solicited money for didn't exist. The committee found that most of the $250 million raised was not spent on election legal challenges, but diverted to causes including Trump Hotels and Conservative Partnership Institute, headed by Meadows, Trump's chief of staff. Funds also went to fund the rally on the Ellipse, where Trump tried to get armed followers admitted, as well as to the America First Policy Institute, which paid Trump's daughter-in-law a hefty speaker's fee. More legal experts on both sides of the political aisle are now calling for Trump to be prosecuted, and the former president is losing support even from some conservatives. For example, the Washington Examiner, a conservative newspaper, published an editorial declaring Trump unfit to hold political office in the future after the latest testimony. The Boston Globe, Las Vegas Sun, and Seattle Times have also published editorials calling for Trump to be prosecuted, and former Attorney General Eric Holder has concluded that revelations that former President Trump told the Department of Justice to declare the election corrupt amounts to a smoking gun, echoing the language of Solomon Wiesenberg, the Clinton Independent Counsel investigator. So this week, as we celebrate our nation's independence, it's important to keep in mind just how close we came to losing our democracy, which remains at risk. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I am pleased to welcome Justice Jackson to the court and to our common calling.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson was sworn in as the newest justice of the Supreme Court Tuesday by Chief Justice John Roberts. Jackson, who's replacing outgoing Justice Stephen Breyer, is the first Black woman to serve on the nation's high court. Jackson's final confirmation capped off a packed final day of the court's term. The court significantly hindered the federal government's ability to fight climate change. In a 6-3 decision, they restricted the Environmental Protection Agency's capacity to regulate air pollution from power plants. In a conversation hosted by the left-leaning American Constitution Society, Kirti Dhatla, Director of Strategic Legal Advocacy for Earth Justice, said the decision could limit the EPA from taking other regulatory actions.
The court has taken what is the most effective way to reduce emissions from the largest source of energy-related greenhouse gas emissions off the table.
The court also ruled 5-4 to strike down former President Donald Trump's stay in Mexico immigration policy, which compelled asylum seekers to remain on the Mexican side of the border while their asylum claims were processed. The Biden administration had sought to end the policy, and the ruling was a rare win for Democrats in the current Supreme Court session. The justices agreed to take up a case in their next term, which could dramatically expand state legislatures' authority to regulate federal elections. A decision which could dramatically impact the 2024 presidential election will come down next year. Meanwhile, speaking at the NATO summit in Spain, President Joe Biden endorsed a narrow filibuster carve-out to pass abortion rights through Congress.
The most important thing to be clear about is I believe we have to codify Roe v. Wade in the law, and the way to do that is to make sure the Congress votes to do that.
To do so would require buy-in from all 50 Democrats in the chamber, including Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who've been entrenched opponents of filibuster reform. At the summit, Biden also announced the U.S. will be providing an additional $800 million in military aid to Ukraine to combat the Russian invasion. Back at home, Representative Liz Cheney, a Wyoming Republican and vice chair of the January 6th committee, this week referred to former President Donald Trump as a, quote, domestic threat.
And he is aided by Republican leaders and elected officials who've made themselves willing hostages to this dangerous and irrational man.
For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The majority of Supreme Court justices who voted to overturn Roe v. Wade are Catholic, and many have criticized the High Court's majority for infusing religion into a medical decision by allowing states to outlaw or restrict abortion. But while the Catholic faith and some evangelical groups view abortion as a sin, banning or severely restricting it can violate the religious views of other faith-based groups. Over 45 religious leaders in San Diego's Jewish community, including dozens of rabbis and heads of Jewish organizations, have signed an open letter stating that the Supreme Court's ruling to overturn Roe v. Wade violates the religious freedom of Jews. Their letter states, "Jewish tradition is grounded in obligation and responsibility to ourselves, one another, and our community," adding that the Jewish faith has long protected the rights of reproductive freedom and justice in cases where health, wellness, and life are at stake. The letter continues, "Jewish experience tells us that our reproductive freedoms are integrally bound to our religious liberty. At the core of the Jewish tradition is the affirmation of the sanctity of life. Further, the tradition recognizes that life does not begin at conception, and the well-being, spiritual, emotional, and physical, of the parent takes precedence over an unborn fetus." The group called the ruling deeply painful and distressing to millions, especially poor women, minorities, and abuse victims. And they pledged, "In the coming days, months, and years, we will continue to fight and advocate for our Jewish values that maintain religious freedom, cherish life, dignity, and enshrine the individual's rights to make their own reproductive choices according to their own conscience. May we find the redemptive strength and courage to restore that which has been stripped away," the letter concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The California Department of Justice has revealed that a data breach of concealed carry applicants is far wider than originally reported. According to the DOJ, personal information has been exposed on everyone who applied for a concealed carry weapons permit, or CCW, between 2011 and 2021, including permits that were granted and those that were denied. Information exposed included names, date of birth, gender, race, driver's license number, addresses, and criminal history. Social security numbers or any financial information were not disclosed, according to the DOJ. The data breach puts gun owners or applicants at risk of identity theft and potential harm. The list includes judges, prosecutors, law enforcement officers, and others, including victims of domestic violence or stalking who may have sought to carry a gun for personal protection. According to the Department of Justice, the data was briefly downloadable online when the agency updated its firearms dashboard portal, and the information was removed within 24 hours. However, the agency now discloses data was also impacted on the following databases: the Assault Weapon Registry, Handgun Certified for Sale, Dealer Record of Sale, Firearm Safety Certificate, and Gun Violence Restraining Order dashboards. The DOJ is investigating the extent to which any personally identifiable information could have been exposed from those dashboards. Attorney General Rob Bonta issued a statement which reads in part, "This unauthorized release of personal information is unacceptable," adding that he is angered by the disclosure. He indicates he immediately launched an investigation into how this occurred and says the California Department of Justice will take strong corrective measures to protect personal data in the future. The department has pledged to notify everyone whose data was exposed and provide additional resources, including how to sign up for free credit monitoring services. The breach occurred following enactment of Assembly Bill 173, passed last September, which allows disclosure of certain information on gun ownership, though not the personal details that were leaked to the public. The National Rifle Association has filed suit in an effort to stop that disclosure, and during an April 5th hearing on that case, Doe versus Bonta, the DOJ acknowledged that disclosure of sensitive personal information could result in civil or criminal penalties. The California Rifle and Pistol Association has called for an independent investigation and indicated it may file suit over the breach, the Los Angeles Times reports. The Department of Justice asks that anyone who accessed the info while it was briefly online to respect privacy and not share or disseminate any of the personal information, adding that anyone who possesses or uses personal identifying information for an unlawful purpose may be guilty of a crime. But the NRA's Institute for Legislative Action states on its website that social media users who first reported the leak have stated that people were able to download all of the leaked personal information from the DOJ website, meaning this information is likely now in the public in perpetuity, the group asserts. So what should you do if you've applied for a concealed carry permit between 2011 and 2021 and believe your personal data may have been breached? Besides registering for free credit monitoring, the Department of Justice advises taking these steps immediately. Monitor your credit history. You can get free copies of your credit reports from the three major bureaus at annualcreditreport.com. Consider placing a free credit freeze on your credit report. Identity thieves will not be able to open a new credit account in your name while the freeze is in place. You can place a credit freeze by contacting each of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. Place a fraud alert on your credit report. A fraud alert helps protect you against the possibility of someone opening new credit accounts in your name. A fraud alert lasts 90 days and can be renewed. If you place fraud alert with any one of the three major credit reporting agencies, the alert will be automatically added by the other two agencies. Contact your local police or sheriff's department right away to report identity theft, and report identity theft to the federal government and generate a recovery plan using the Federal Trade Commission's website at identitytheft.gov. For more information and resources, visit the California Attorney General's website at oag.ca.gov/ID theft. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. Machine guns were among 46 firearms found and seized at the Ramona home of a man suspected in a series of burglaries at the Ace Self-Storage facility in Lakeside. After identifying the subject, sheriff's deputies aided by a SWAT team conducted the raid on June 27th. Many of the weapons found were stolen, says Lieutenant Sean Ray. Deputies also found a large stash of methamphetamine drugs, as well as other illegal weapons, including brass knuckles, batons, and guns, ranging from pistols to fully automatic machine guns. 36-year-old Troy Eberhardt was arrested and charged with numerous crimes, including possession of a machine gun, converting a firearm to a machine gun, and being a felon in possession of a firearm and narcotics.
While members of the Santee City Council say they adamantly oppose marijuana use, they also can't ignore the escalating tax dollars other cities are reaping from the sale of the drug. In the first 3 months of this year, for example, the city of San Diego reaped over $5.4 million in tax revenues from taxes on cannabis businesses. At its meeting in late June, its fifth on the topic, Santee's council looked at various options to regulate cannabis businesses and tax those sales to fund other city needs. The council delayed making any decision and asked its legal advisors to return in July with some more defined options. Santee appears likely to adopt an ordinance defining what type of cannabis business can operate in the city and establish a tax rate that could range from 4 to 12%. Vice Mayor Ron Hall continued to push the city to set the tax rate as high as legally possible. But Councilwoman Laura Koval said the city should be careful about restricting the city's options in the future and use a process called a community benefit agreement with individual owners. This would give the city more flexibility to make changes and wouldn't require a public vote, she said. Several members said holding a public election, which is required for collecting new taxes, would be too costly. However, Mayor John Minto said he wasn't concerned about the cost, which he believes would likely be recouped from a day's worth of cannabis sales. City Attorney Sean Haggerty said he would bring a range of options back for the council to consider that would include both the community benefit agreement and a tax measure for a public vote. To qualify for the November ballot, the council has to adopt a measure by early August. As they have at earlier workshops, the majority of residents speaking at the hearing urged the council to reject anything to do with marijuana. Most cited statistics that show cannabis can lead to addiction, use of other drugs, and generate crime. Yet while cannabis remains illegal by federal statutes, it's legal in California, and many cities are bolstering their revenue intake by controlling its sale and getting an increasing share of those sales, revenues lost to the city of Santee if cannabis sales remain banned. City Finance Director Tim McDermott estimated revenue from a retail store at about $3.5 million a year. Since the council has already signaled it would allow 4 retail locations, that would mean the city could collect about $840,000 if the city imposes a tax of 6% on total sales of $14 million from 4 locations. In other actions, the council approved its 2022-23 operating budget for the fiscal year, beginning July 1st. Santee's general fund budget shows revenue increasing by 2.5% to just over $54 million and expenditures raising 4%, resulting in a net gain of $791,000. That's after setting aside $1.2 million into reserves, with the reserve balance expected to total $12.3 million by the end of the next fiscal year. The budget also includes 5.5% salary raises to help full-time workers deal with inflation. Santee's two biggest generators of tax revenue, property taxes and sales taxes, are projected to rise next year, but due to economic uncertainties, the sales category could be much less than in past years, McDermott said. But if the city or its voters ultimately approve legalizing cannabis sales and taxing them, those revenues could be far higher. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. East County's most beloved Independence Day celebrations are back after a hiatus during the pandemic. Here are some of the fun and festive 4th of July activities in our inland region, including fireworks, a parade, a music festival, and much more. The Lake Murray Fireworks and Music Fest will be held at the Lake Murray Playground on the San Carlos side of Lake Murray from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., followed by fireworks over the lake at 9 o'clock. The festival includes live music by multiple bands, plus food, games, a scavenger hunt for kids, and more. For more information, you can visit lakemurrayfireworks.org. Arrive early for Julian's big 4th of July parade since Main Street shuts down at 9 a.m. Julian's 4th of July celebration starts at 10 a.m. with pre-parade activities, including a flyover of four World War II Stearman biplanes, patriotic music on three stages, and more live entertainment. Then at 10:30, there's a pie-eating contest. A second flyover happens at noon with military training planes and the playing of the national anthem. The parade kicks off after the anthem with a giant American flag carried down Main Street. Visitors can cheer on the Marine Corps Color Guard, the Gold Drum and Bugle Corps, a mariachi, Continental de San Diego band, and marching bands from local schools. Antique cars, vintage tractors, belly dancers, World War II submariners, and comedy entries will also appear. And after the parade, the Julian Woman's Club has a historic quilt show and a raffle for a handmade quilt. From 1 to 5 p.m., a deep pit barbecue and dance will be held by the American Legion. And you can also shop at local merchants or take a buggy ride through this historic Gold Rush town. You can get more info at julianparade.com. The community of Crest in unincorporated El Cajon will host its 4th of July event from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Nancy Jane Park. That's located at 113 North Park Drive in El Cajon. This event includes fun for the whole family, including a craft fair, food, kids' games, live music, a costume contest, including a dog costume competition, super raffle, silent auction, and more. The Ramona Family Picnic and Fireworks Show, presented by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce, Ramona Rotary, and Ramona Kiwanis Clubs, includes a family picnic and fireworks show. It will be held on the back field at Olive Pierce Middle School, located on Hanson Road in Ramona. The picnic starts at 4 o'clock with fireworks at 9 p.m. Bring a blanket and lawn chairs to enjoy a celebration of our nation's birthday. You can get more information at ramonaevents.com. Santee Salutes is held by the City of Santee, which invites you to celebrate our nation's 246th birthday from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Town Center Community Park in Santee. There is a fee for parking, and it has to be purchased in advance on the City's website. Parking is limited, so you should consider carpooling, biking, walking, or using a rideshare service. There's free parking at Costco, but no shuttle service this year. The Fun Zone opens at 2 o'clock and accepts cash only for rides. At 3:45, a flyover will be held by the San Diego Salute Formation Flying Team. Food vendors and the Riverwalk Grill open at 4, or you can bring your own picnic. A patriotic ceremony at 6 p.m. will be followed by an 80s All-Star Concert at 6:30 p.m. with a fireworks show at 9 p.m. And be aware that barbecues, glass containers, and hard liquor are prohibited at this event. For full details, you can visit cityofsantee.gov. One of our Inland Region's largest Independence Day celebrations takes place at Old Poway Park on Midland Road in Poway. The old-fashioned 4th of July, held from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., celebrates our country's independence in turn-of-the-20th-century style. This event will feature patriotic entertainment, Western reenactors, model train displays, free crafts, and old-fashioned games. You can ride aboard a historic train or enjoy tasty treats. There are shuttles to and from the event available from two different locations, including the Poway City Hall parking lot and Poway Adult School parking lot. Shuttles will run throughout the event. You can get more information and photos of past events at poway.org. Click on the old-fashioned 4th of July tab. The City of El Cajon hosts its annual fireworks show at Kennedy Park on East Madison Avenue in El Cajon. The fireworks starts at 9 p.m. You can arrive early and bring a picnic in the park, which also includes a dog park. You can get more at elcajon.gov. The City of Escondido is bringing back its free professional fireworks show to celebrate Independence Day. However, there will not be the traditional large-scale event, only fireworks. And the show starts at 9. The community is welcome to enjoy the fireworks show from anywhere in central Escondido, including Grape Day Park. Fireworks will be launched from a location in the Woodward Avenue parking lot. Grape Day Park will be open past dusk with traditional regulations in place. No dogs, barbecues, or alcohol are allowed. You can get more information at escondido.org and click on the Independence Day Celebration tab. You can also enjoy a San Diego 4th of July parade and festival at Scripps Ranch. Community groups, high school marching bands, and more will entertain you as you watch the parade. Afterwards, you can enjoy ice cream at an ice cream social in Hoyt Park. Food, drink, and games are available at the festival. The parade starts at 10 a.m. at Ironwood Red Cedar Drive, proceeding to Ironwood Road, to Courtyard Drive, to Red Rock Drive, to Scripps Ranch Boulevard, ending in Avery Drive. The festival runs from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Scripps Ranch Hoyt Park. For more information about the Scripps Ranch 4th of July Parade and Festival, you can visit scrippsranch.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ. In honor of Independence Day and the birth of independent media here today, we have lined up some very special interviews. Have you ever wondered what our founding fathers would have said about the news events that are happening now in America? Well, we decided to ask them. That's right. We've conjured up the spirits of 1776, our founding fathers, and some founding mothers who fought for the liberties that we enjoy today. Of course, we couldn't really bring them back to life, but we have brought in actors to read in their own words the views of these revolutionary patriots, the radicals of their day. We asked them questions about the hot issues of our times, and the words they spoke over 200 years ago are as relevant today as they were back when America was born. Plus, in the spirit of bringing you all sides to this story, we have also brought in a leader from the Native American community during colonial times, as well as that ruler against whom the colonists rebelled, King George III. And now let's welcome our guests to KNSJ. Now, could each of you rabble-rousers please start by sharing a favorite quote with our listeners? Let's begin with former President Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Inspiring words. Next, we have Benjamin Franklin, famed statesman, scientist, and newspaper editor. Ambassador Franklin, what's your quote for today?
Rebellion against tyrants is obedience to God.
Thank you, Ambassador Franklin. Next up, Patrick Henry, my ancestor and the former Virginia governor who called the British Stamp Act treason and helped foment the American Revolution.
Give me liberty or give me death!
King George, you had a little different view of this rebellion. Will you please share your reaction?
Once these rebels have felt a smart blow, they will submit.
Never! Never!
George, feel the smart blows themselves.
Your Highness, it didn't quite work out that way. We are also honored to have with us George Washington, the first president of our nation, known as the father of our country, a leader famed for his integrity.
I hold the maxim, no less applicable to public than to private affairs, that honesty is the best policy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our next guest is Phyllis Wheatley, known as the poet of the Revolution. She once wrote a poem and sent it to General Washington himself. Mrs. Wheatley, can you please share an excerpt?
Proceed, great chief, with virtue on thy side. Thy every action let the goddess guide.
General Washington later invited you to actually meet with him. Can you please read another of your revolutionary verses?
Thick as leaves in autumn's golden rain, such and so many moves the warrior's train.
Now, Mrs. Wheatley also sent poems to British nobility and had her work published in a colonial newspaper. Her accomplishments are even more impressive when you learn that Mrs. Wheatley was a slave at the time, educated by her masters, more fortunate than the vast majority of slaves, of course. She later gained fame for her eloquent defense of liberty for all people, but more on that later. Our next guest is John Adams, diplomat and former president. What's your founding vision?
Government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, safety, prosperity, and happiness of the people, and not for profit, honor, or private interest.
Not for profit.
All right. Now we will hear from your wife, Abigail Adams. Mrs. Adams, you were a first lady and a champion for women's rights long before it was fashionable.
If we mean to have heroes, statesmen, and philosophers, we should have learned women.
Amen. Indeed, James Madison, another former president, we have quite a few of them here today, co-authored the Federalist Papers that helped to win ratification of the Constitution. President Madison?
Liberty may be endangered by the abuse of liberty, but also by the abuse of power.
Now, some listeners may not know that the American Revolution divided Native American people. Some tribes sided with the colonists and others with the British. Our next guest is Mohawk Indian Chief Thayenanegaye, also known by his English name, Chief Joseph Brant. He sided with the British during the Revolution and was actually considered one of Britain's finest officers, leading battles against those rebellious colonists. Chief Brant, please explain why you chose to oppose the colonists.
Indeed, it is very hard
when we have let the king's subjects have so much of our lands for so little value. The Mohawks have on all occasions shown their zeal and loyalty to the great king, yet they have been very harshly treated by his people.
And finally, Thomas Paine, a corset maker by trade, later a journalist and a pamphleteer who authored Common Sense, or as the British called him, a propagandist. Mr. Paine, what quote would you like to share?
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands now deserves the love and thanks of a man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered.
Thank you, thank you. Now for our first question. How important do you believe it is to have media that is independent, free from control by the government or by powerful corporations? President Jefferson, let's start with you.
Where the press is free and every man able to read, all is safe. Where left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter.
Ambassador Franklin, as a former newsman yourself, can you weigh in on the trend toward media censorship of controversial issues?
Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freedom of speech. If all printers were determined not to print anything till they were sure it would offend nobody, there would be very little printed.
President Madison, why is a free press important to you?
To the press alone, checkered as it is with abuses, the world is indebted for all the triumphs which have been obtained by reason and humanity over error and oppression.
Next question. Recently, a whistleblower...
Whistleblower? Do you mean a fife player?
No, a whistleblower is someone who sounds an alarm.
Oh, like Paul Revere, our good friend who warned us that the British were coming.
Something like that. This whistleblower revealed that the government has been spying on Americans and accessing our telephone and internet records.
Phones? Internets? What manner of inventions are these?
Ambassador Franklin, I'll be happy to show you how to tweet and surf the net after our interview. I believe you'll be amazed.
Tweet?
But now the government argues that knowing who we communicate with is necessary to protect us from terrorists. Yet others say this violates our constitutional liberties. Ambassador Franklin, what's your view?
They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
Huzzah! Edward Snowden, the whistleblower who leaked the classified documents, proving that our government has been spying on Americans' phone and internet records, has been charged with treason. There is a very vigorous debate going on as to whether he is a hero or a traitor. King George, what's your definition of a traitor?
A traitor, of course, is anyone who does not agree with me.
Now you can see why they called him Mad King George.
Mr. Henry, in a very famous speech, you denounced the Stamp Act and declared that only colonists should have the right to levy taxes, not the king, and you went on to foment rebellion. Some in the crowd even shouted treason. What was your response?
If this be treason, make the most of it.
No new taxes.
It sounds like the original Tea Party movement. Chief Brandt, you traveled to Europe and were warmly received at the British court. But you raised some royal eyebrows when you were introduced to King George here. Tell us what you said.
I told the king, I bow to no man, for I am considered a prince among my own people. But I will gladly shake your hand.
Shake hands with no man.
President Madison, in your day, the Barbary pirates were considered terrorists. Now drones, spies in the skies, are being deployed along our borders.
Spies in the skies? Do you mean balloons, such as the French launched in Paris?
Drones, actually, are unmanned flying machines, Mr. President.
Flying machines? Imagine that.
Do you believe changing times warrant more intrusion into our privacy to assure that foreign terrorists are not plotting against us?
If tyranny and oppression come to this land, it will be in the guise of fighting a foreign enemy. It is a universal truth that the loss of liberty at home is to be charged to the provisions against danger, real or pretended, from abroad.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Henry, what do you have to say about these recent erosions of our constitutional liberties?
Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect anyone who approaches that jewel.
Huzzah!
President Washington, are you concerned about a chilling effect on free speech if journalists are monitored?
If the freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent we may be led, like sheep to the slaughter.
Mrs. Adams, you once urged your husband, John, to remember the ladies when the Constitution was written.
That I did, though he did not listen.
Shame!
As to your extraordinary code of laws, I cannot bit laugh, my saucy bride. We know better than to repeal our masculine systems.
You may both find it of interest to know that a constitutional amendment finally granted women the right to vote.
Excellent. Excellent.
Though it didn't happen until 1920.
Mercy, what took those men so long?
Good question.
My heavens, this subjects us to the despotism of the petticoat.
But even now, in the year 2013, women are still earning only 77 cents for every dollar earned by men. Mrs. Adams, is your advice to your husband still valid today?
Certainly. All men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion, and we will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation.
Strong words indeed. Mrs. Wheatley, you once sent a poem to Britain's Earl of Dartmouth, both celebrating American independence and making a case for abolition to bring freedom to African Americans. Can you please share some of that verse?
No more, America, in mournful strain of wrongs and grievance, unredressed complain. No longer shalt thou dread the iron chain which wanton tyranny with lawless hand had made, and with it meant enslave the land. Should you, my lord, while you peruse my song, wonder from whence my love of freedom sprung, whence flow these wishes for the common good, by feeling hearts alone best understood. I, young in life, my seeming cruel fate was snatched from Africa's fancied happy seat.
Thank you. Times have changed since then. The Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves in the 1860s, and later, African Americans were granted equal rights. Today, we even have a black president.
Glory! Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Your efforts were a key part of those changes. In a letter to a well-known minister here in the colonies, you likened slaveholders to the ancient Egyptians who enslaved the Israelites. As one of the early voices in the abolitionist movement, tell us what words you used to spark his conscience.
For in every human breast, God has implanted a principle, which we call love of freedom. It is impatient of oppression and pants for deliverance. And by the leave of our modern Egyptians, I will assert that the same principle lives in us.
Speaking of Israelites fleeing Egypt for a better life elsewhere, immigration is a hot topic again here today, as it has been for many, many years. President Madison, what is your view?
America was indebted to immigration for her settlement and prosperity. That part of America which had encouraged them most had advanced most rapidly in population, agriculture, and the arts.
Some broadcast media today foments bigotry and racism. President Jefferson, do you find that troubling?
Broadcast media? It sounds narrow-minded. Bigotry is the disease of ignorance, of morbid mind. Here in America, we are destined to be a barrier against the returns of ignorance and barbarism.
Thank you. Chief Brandt, the revolution had an unfortunate consequence for Native Americans, who in seeking to protect their lands and cultural heritage were actually called barbarians. When the war was over, the British ceded lands in America, not to the tribes who fought alongside them, but to the colonists. The war fueled resentment by colonists against those tribes that sided with the British and led to even worse oppression of some Indian tribes. But now in our time, the Idle No More movement has arisen, standing up for Native American rights. What are your thoughts on this?
Idle No More. If this effort demands respect for our sovereign rights, I rise in support. We are tired out in making complaints and getting no redress.
Most of our guests today have advocated for rebellion and fought in the Revolutionary War. In recent years, however, America has gone to war far beyond our own borders, even starting a preemptive war in the Middle East. What are your views on war and peace, President Jefferson?
Peace and friendship with all mankind is our wisest policy, and I wish we may be permitted to pursue it. I have seen enough of one war never to wish to see another. The spirit of this country is totally adverse to a large military force.
President Adams, what are your thoughts?
Great is the guilt of an unnecessary war.
Mr. Franklin, how about you?
There was never a good war or a bad peace. Wars are not paid for in wartime.
The bill comes later.
The bill does come later. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of bills, I'm sure Tea Party listeners out there would want me to ask you about the national debt. President Jefferson, what are your thoughts on that?
The principle of spending money to be paid by posterity under the name of funding is but swindling futurity on a large scale.
Gun violence is on the rise in America today. As a revolutionary, what is your take on the Second Amendment, President Madison?
Americans have the right and advantage of being armed, unlike the citizens of other countries whose governments are afraid to trust the people with arms.
King George, what's your reaction to these armed upstarts in the colonies defeating that powerful British military force of yours?
Knavery seems to be so much the striking feature of its inhabitants that it may not, in the end, be an evil that they will become aliens to this kingdom.
So much for diplomacy. My next question is for Ambassador Franklin. A diplomat himself and a man of science known for his many inventions, including reportedly flying a kite in a storm to prove the workings of electricity.
Dear me, that was a shocking experience.
Ambassador, technology has seen many advances since your day, including radio and television, instant communications that use electricity.
So the power of lightning has been harnessed at last.
Yes, it has. But now some factions want to defund scientific research and discredit scientists on issues such as climate change, and not the kind you wrote about in Poor Richard's Almanac, I might add.
The rapid progress true science now makes occasions my regretting sometimes that I was born too soon. It is impossible to imagine the height to which may be carried in 1,000 years the power of man over matter. Agriculture may diminish its labor and double its produce. All diseases may, by sure means, be prevented or cured, not even excepting that of old age, and our lives lengthened at pleasure.
Oh, it would be nice to have our lives lengthened.
Mm-hmm. President Jefferson, how important is science in your view?
When I contemplate the immense advances in science and discoveries in the arts which have been made within the period of my life, I look forward with confidence to equal advances by the present generation and have no doubt they will consequently be as much wiser than we have been as we than our fathers were, and they than the burners of witches.
The Supreme Court, in a case called Citizens United, ruled that corporations have the same rights as people, and that restrictions on corporate contributions to candidates may not be limited. Mr. Payne, you warned about corporate power in your Rights of Man.
Corporations have a more extensive evil effect than what relates merely to elections. They are sources of endless contentions in places where they exist, and they lessen the common rights of national society.
Thomas Paine speaks the truth.
President Jefferson, the Occupy movement is a protest movement that's arisen over the power of big banks. How seriously do you take such concern?
I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies.
Now that's a revolutionary mm-hmm. thought.
Yeah.
Chief Brandt, in our time, as in the time of the British Empire and colonial days, the rich and powerful sometimes seem to be above the law. You've had some strong words to say on this subject.
In the government you called civilized, the happiness of the people is constantly sacrificed to the splendor of the empire. Hence the origin of your codes of criminal and civil laws. Hence your dungeons and prisons.
Can you tell us how justice has traditionally been meted out in your Native American society?
We have no prisons.
Really?
We have no written laws. And yet judges are as highly revered among us as they are among you, and their decisions are as much regarded. We have among us no exalted villains above the control of our laws. Daring wickedness is here never allowed to triumph over helpless innocence. The estates of widows and orphans are never devoured by enterprising swindlers. We have no robbery under the pretext of law.
Can we imagine how different our world would be if this system were in place today? Now, on another topic, religious freedom and separation of church and state. You founding fathers have some differences of opinion, I understand. Let's start with President Madison.
The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries.
Amen. Mr. Payne, will you please tell us your opinion?
All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no other than human inventions, set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit.
Ambassador Franklin, what's your view?
In the affairs of this world, men are saved not by faith, but by the want of it. But to follow by faith alone is to follow blindly.
Recently, we've seen a trend towards secrecy by our government. How important is it to assure that media can serve as watchdogs to bring forth truth, Mr. Henry?
The liberties of a people never were nor will ever be secure when the transactions of their rulers may be concealed from them.
Yes. Yes.
On a lighter note, let's take some questions about pop culture. Another innovation recently is video games. I am sure our younger listeners will want to hear your views on gaming, Ambassador Franklin.
Games lubricate the body and the mind.
Oh. That sounds like Ben Franklin, doesn't it?
You charmer, you. One constitutional amendment that was passed and later repealed was a prohibition on alcohol. Winemaking has become a growing industry in our region, as it has long been in France, where you spent a great deal of your time, Ambassador. What are your views on imbibing those fruits of the vine?
Wine is constant proof that God loves us and loves to see us happy.
Amen. President Jefferson, you have been a champion of creating a strong public education system. But today, the price of college has risen sharply, though the current administration is striving to increase funds to help students. Can you tell us who you believe should be entitled to an education and why you think that is important?
The most promising genius, whose parents are too poor to give them further education, to be carried at the public expense through the college and university. The object is to bring into action that mass of talents which lies buried in poverty, and thus give activity to a mass of mind which, in proportion to our population, shall be double or treble of what is in most countries.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. Media bias is a growing concern in modern times, since the consolidation of media has put most major media outlets into the hands of a few big corporations. Mrs. Adams, do you believe it is important for people to hear multiple points of view?
I've always felt that a person's intelligence is directly reflected by the number of conflicting points of view he can entertain simultaneously on the same topic.
Thank you. What advice would you give to those who feel that it's just too much trouble to get involved in protecting our democracy, Mrs. Adams?
We have too many high-sounding words and too few actions that correspond with them.
Mr. Payne, do you agree?
The more difficult the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. An army of principles can penetrate where an army of soldiers cannot.
Mr. Henry, what's your advice to the citizens of today?
The battle is not to the strong alone.
It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave.
President Adams, what's at stake here? Is there a risk in complacency?
Liberty cannot be preserved without general knowledge among the people. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide.
Perhaps it takes truth and an informed populace for democracy to survive and thrive. President Washington, what are your closing thoughts as we celebrate the birth of independent media here today?
Truth will ultimately prevail where there is pain to bring it to light.
President Adams, what advice do you have for our listeners and for future generations?
Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives.
Yeah. Well said.
Yes.
Well said.
Yes. Ambassador Franklin, are you concerned about election integrity?
Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote.
President Jefferson, we'll let you have the final word here on this Independence Day celebration with KNSJ.
I thank KNSJ for inviting us here to remind Americans today why we fought for the independence we won in 1776. I hold it that a little rebellion now and then is a good thing and as necessary in the political world as storms in the physical.
Thank you. If people do stand up for those rights enshrined by you founding fathers and mothers, how optimistic are you for our nation's future, President Jefferson?
I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past.
Thanks to all of you for joining us on this very special 4th of July celebration, and I hope that everyone listening will have a festive and spirited Independence Day.
Yeah.